Welcome back to another episode of Legal Latitudes. Today, we have a really exciting and unique conversation lined up for you. We are diving into the world of improvisation, not in the theater, but in the courtroom. Joining us are two incredible guests who bring a fresh perspective to the way trial lawyers prepare and perform. Steve Homan and Olivia Espinosa. Steve and Olivia come from the world of acting and improv, but they found a powerful niche working with trial lawyers. They help us sharpen our skills in ways you may not expect. They say trials, as we know, never go exactly as planned. A witness might surprise you, an objection could derail you, or juror's reaction may call for a pivot. That's why improvisation is so important. Being able to adapt and stay present in the moment can be the difference between losing and winning. In today's episode, we'll get into what Steve and Olivia do, why they do it, and how their techniques can transform your approach in the courtroom. We'll explore everything from storytelling, body language, to the surprising advantages of saying yes and during cross-examinations. Whether you're a seasoned trial lawyer, a law student, or just curious about the intersection of theater and law, you're in for a treat here. So let's dive in and welcome Steve Homan and Olivia Espinosa to Legal Latitudes. Steve and Olivia, welcome to Legal Latitudes. It's a real pleasure to have you here with me. I'm looking forward to this episode because you're so fun to talk to, so fun to hang with since the moment I met you. Back in the day when we were at that party, I immediately saw that you guys are always smiling, and you know, so I'm looking forward to this episode. Thank you for being here with me.
Likewise, thank you for having us. You were the greeter at that time. You were right. The first one we met when we walked through the door. Yes, we were happy to be here.
So you guys do improv for trial, which, you know, when you think about improv, it somewhat sounds more like acting, right? And you're working with lawyers. And we're going to talk about that in this episode. But before, I would like to touch on your background. Because, you know, Legal Latitudes, I'm an immigrant myself. And I like to know about, like, where people come from, my guests and all that. And that way we can show another side that maybe they don't know about you. So, Olivia, let's start with you. Where are you from originally? And, yeah.
I am originally from Northern California, the Bay Area, but I am first-generation Mexican-American. Both of my parents were born in Mexico, my dad in Mexico City, and then my mom in Tijuana. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I grew up speaking Spanish. It was my first language until I went to kindergarten and had to just learn it on my own. So,
really?
Yeah.
Were you the translator for your parents for a while?
You know, that's a great question because a lot of people are, right, at that young age, but I was not. So both of my parents had been here, each of them, since high school or younger. Mm-hmm. And so, interestingly enough, I lost all the Spanish. I grew up speaking that language. It was my only language until kindergarten. And then, you know, my parents didn't want me to speak with an accent. And so I had to relearn it in school, just like everybody else,
really?
Taking Spanish in middle school and in high school. Because, yeah, it just was gone for me. So I've had to relearn it.
But you speak well now, no?
I hope so.
Yeah, I think based on our brief conversations, you speak well. What about you, Steve?
I grew up in L.A. suburb, Downey. My parents came from the Midwest when they were young, and so I have like a Midwestern. I've been told I say sorry a lot, so I'm always apologizing. But no, I grew up in the L.A. area, and then went to college at San Diego State. That's where I met Olivia, and we were in a play together. We were in a Greek play called Lysistrata, or Lysistrata, depending on if you're doing it with an English accent or not. But we were both playing in the chorus, and then that play, it's where the females, to stop war, they withhold sex from the men. And so there's these two choruses of the old women and the old men, and we had the old women, which Olivia was in, they had these... like long saggy boobs, and I know I'm telling the story. And
I love it. I was gonna say please tell us a story, because like everybody likes to hear a romantic, you know, beginning.
And my costume had this long droopy phallus. It was so fair. But that's how we met. We actually were friends for many years. But we were both theater, studying theater at San Diego State, and that's how we met. And then we realized after a few years of being friends that, hey, we're actually been dating. So that's how the story of how we met. And then we've lived in San Diego ever since, really, pretty much.
Have you kissed yet or still like just holding hands? Huh? wait, like at a certain point, it's like, well, we're friends, but we like kissing each other. I don't know, like, huh?
Or something like that.
I didn't realize that what this podcast was going to be about, but that's all right. No, I think it was interesting because I think in the theater department, like you have to automatically be close with who you are working with because okay. You need to trust them. Mm-hmm. You need to have their back on stage right. And you have to have their back on stage. And so instantly you make friends. We have friends that are like family from that department, but it kind of just grew from that because you have to trust each other and have each other's back.
That's a good story. That's better than getting to know each other through Tinder, right?
Exactly.
So
that there's anything wrong with that.
No, not at all. But there is some backstory into how life put you both into, this path that you're now still going through, which is acting, but with a twist, right? Because you're doing it for lawyers. And you're using your skills into what lawyers do in the courtroom. So how is it that from being actors, and you were telling me before we started recording that you have different quote-unquote specializations, right? You're more improv and Olivia's more script. So why don't you describe a little bit what's that difference for people who don't know?
Yeah, you know, when scripted work, and you know Olivia can speak to it too if I miss anything, but it's really, you know, you're performing from a written script that a playwright or a screenwriter has written, and you're creating a character based off of those written words. You're trying to mine it for, you know, all those little gems that help you become a full character. In improv, and you usually it's a comedic thing. That's usually where you see improv, but it doesn't have to be. But in that case, you're discovering your character on the spot with whoever you're performing with.
Right.
And so for me, I needed the cheat because it was really, I'm a little ADD, and a lot of improvisers are. It's really hard for me to be consistent with scripted material. And okay. I did improv in high school, and then I kind of went away from it. Our school didn't really have a great improv program at the time we went there. But when I got back into it, I realized that moment of discovery, because you're discovering everything with, you know, like I said, you're creating your characters, you're finding out where you are. There's no props or set or anything like that. So that, like, it kept me fully focused on what's going on. And so when I react in that improvised scene, I'm having genuine emotions because I'm giving myself fully to that scene. And so for me, it worked really well. And I love that navigating the unexpected and trying to, you know, keep pushing forward to achieve all the goals that you need to do to put on something that people want to watch. You know?
Right.
Keep the narrative going, which really helped out once we kind of fell into working with attorneys.
So you were performing for a while before working with lawyers. You would, what did you do before doing what you're doing right now?
So before I like I said, we turned a one-day gig or two-day gig into, now we've been doing it for over 10 years working with lawyers. But I was an ensemble member of a theater in San Diego called National Comedy Theater, and they just celebrated their 25th year. But I was on there, I was part of their main stage cast for 10 years. And at that point, when I first started working with lawyers, I'd been doing it for about 4 years at that time.
Okay.
But before I really gave myself to the arts, I took a 5-year sabbatical from working in the arts because I had that moment of like, I got to do something with my life. And I, once again, kind of fell into working auto claims. I was an adjuster for a number of years.
Oh, no way.
And so I wasn't doing any acting because I was exhausted from all that work. So I understand how that feels for attorneys too, even though it's kind of a different animal. But I did thousands of interviews investigating claims, and I had an understanding, even though I was burnt out and I never wanted to do that again at the end. I kind of was like, what is this ever going to, be helpful to me in my career as an actor going forward? I had no idea. But what I realized from that time interviewing all these people, when I first started, I got really frustrated interviewing people because they would like lie. They would just always be lying. It's like obvious that you didn't see the person before you got hit because you weren't paying attention, that kind of stuff. Right. And something clicked in me when I realized, and I think this is because we came from an actor's background, where I realized that these people aren't lying. They've gone through this story so many times in their head that they're like, no, it wasn't me. I didn't do the thing. I'm ethical. Mm-hmm. And actually that's how we, I don't want to, get too far ahead. But when we're doing simulation work, acting as experts or lay witnesses or anything in simulations, we take that approach where the witness is trying to be an ethical person, even when everything they're saying doesn't seem that way. There's an ethical boundary that they want to live in. They may have moved the goalposts and twisted things a bit. But I took that approach. What I said was there was a 1 day or 2 day gig. Roger Dodd came to San Diego, and because I was at the theater I was at, or an ensemble member, and I was teaching improv to grade school kids and working at some of the major or the big theaters in San Diego in their education department. It fell in my lap that he was looking for two improv actors.
Yeah, and you are touching on many topics that I really want to address in detail. Mm-hmm. So when Roger Dodd shows up or that opportunity came to touch your lap, was Olivia around or you came after? Like,
I actually came later. Steve started with another improv actor, and I think it was really because at the time I was doing a lot of scripted work. I am an actor who does plays that exist or are in development. So for me, that's my foundation. That's where I got, like, even just, when Steve talks about, he can sink his teeth into something where he just makes it up on the spot. For me, that's scary for me. So I didn't come to improv until much, much later because I needed that foundation. I needed that, that thing to fall back on. And, but for me, I find something new every time I do the script over again.
So how long were you into working with lawyers? Olivia decided to join you.
It was probably about a year. Probably about a year. And it was something that I was very nervous about again because I don't do that. I don't do improv. And so I think that the educational part of it for me, I am an educator. I've taught anywhere from fourth grade to kids in juvenile hall and foster youth group homes. And for me, it's really about helping attorneys be better storytellers. And also just like in my work in the theater, I want to give a voice to the voiceless. And that's what attorneys do. And so for that, for me, is where I found comfort in the helping aspect of it. And then all my defenses slipped away from that.
And we're going to get into the story. Storytelling part, but we mentioned Roger Dodd, and for us lawyers, we know who Roger Dodd is, right? But for people who are listening to this that don't know who Roger Dodd is, you more than anyone know who he is, right? So why don't you tell everybody who Roger Dodd is?
He wrote a book called Cross-Examination: Science and Techniques, amongst several other books. That one he wrote with Larry Posner is probably the more well-known book. He's written several other books, even with his son Matt. But it's all about cross-examination. And so he has a two-day clinic that teaches those things, but actively teaches it, which for me fit in with the style of teaching that we like to do. And it was really fun because we got to play a bunch of different characters and start sparring. And actually, right before we started working with Roger, I had actually started working teaching improv to a mock trial team at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. So I was already kind of working with them. I was teaching them straight up improv. I didn't have the program that we have now, which is way more specific. But So it's kind of funny how just, you know, right. life sometimes.
So we know that trial lawyers are, you know, performers, right? This improv trial work connected, it's something that has been there forever or is somewhat new based on your experience.
You know, it's funny. We got to hear Roger talk about this. You know, we were in his clinics a lot, so we got to hear a lot of the stories. But he, you know, he was saying in his day, he'd have to, you know, go with the older guys to the bar and kind of milk tips and stuff out of them that they didn't really want to give you, but if you hung out long enough, to get those that performance stuff, you had to do it through trial and error. Right. And that was the interesting thing is once we started doing the clinics and you know, probably a few times in, immediately I knew there was some kind of connection to what I was doing on improv. I couldn't put my finger on it completely, but it wound up being about yes and. But he created a whole system that really uses a lot of what we use in improv. And we, talking to Roger, we figured, like, we were having those conversations
right.
and saying, like, oh my God, there's a lot of, mm-hmm. and it took a while to figure out how to, like, use improv as a teaching tool for constructive cross-examination. And I, you know, I kind of skipped over that part. That's Roger's really, his approach to cross-examination is making it a conversational.
Right, constructive cross-examination,
yeah.
building your case through cross-examination.
Yeah.
As a parenthesis, you know, because you know more than I do, but I heard about Roger Dodd as I'm still a younger lawyer. And I remember during the pandemic when we were doing case analysis, these very good trial lawyers that have won every single case were listening to Roger Dodd criticizing them and their cross-examination skills, looking at these videos, and they were attentively listening to this guy. And that immediately, of course, called my attention, because why is Brian Panish? Why is Sean Claggett? Why are these all these guys getting criticism from this guy must be an eminence in the field. And it's crazy that these guys have been doing this for so long, and still Roger could find mistakes, you know, things that they could do better and whatnot. So yeah, so that's my take on who Roger Dodd is. And then I go to meet him on conferences, and he's up there, one of the best cross examiners in the country, right? And you've been working, both of you, Olivia and Steve, working with Roger for, you said, 10 years.
We worked with him for about 7 years.
7 years.
And he helped us create our improv program that
okay.
is specifically teaching the skills of cross-examination
okay.
Through improvisation. So
That's...
he was one of the first people who tried out our program and sort of really helped us develop it and hone it.
No way. That's great. Because I did a little part of your
yeah.
program. So the full program, how long it is?
So it depends. We have a four-hour program. That's really our introductory program, which is the one that you
did.
We mm-hmm. condensed it to 3 hours. But then we have longer programs because, you know, it's really about the
yeah.
practice, right? It's, as Dan Ambrose says, about the reps. So we do have longer programs when it comes to that because it's, you know, it's a constant thing. It's a lifelong learning practice.
Yeah, for sure. So from storytelling, how improv connects with storytelling? That's something. We're going to talk about the cross-examination part and more of like the techniques that you guys teach. But let's start with the storytelling, which is so important for every lawyer.
It really is. And I'm just reminded when I hear that kind of connection of how important storytelling is when I worked in teaching playwriting in juvenile hall. And, you know, those kids, I had to teach them how to write a play, but none of them had really ever seen theater before. And
right.
so before they dove into writing a play, we brought in professional actors
mm-hmm.
to act out scenes for them so they could see the difference between writing, you know, a first-person narrative versus dialogue with characters. And after the first session, after bringing actors in and them presenting to these kids, I asked the kids, you know, what kept you listening? And I'll never forget, one student raised his hand and he said, it made me forget that I was here.
Wow.
In the middle of juvenile hall, right, with maximum security doors and everything is locked and they have, you know, all the same shoes and clothes on, that storytelling aspect is what made him forget that he was, you know, even in this classroom for a moment. And that is, I think, the power of storytelling. And how we translate that is, you know, you need to recreate that for your jurors, right? Right. They weren't there when the events of the leading up to trial happened. So creating that in real time for them is a really big part of what is powerful to transport right. them, to create empathy, and to get them to fight for your client.
Right. So the consulting services mm-hmm. that you guys provide to lawyers include also the way that you create this story, right? And Steve, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We've been doing this so long now that we're actually able to work with people to organize and help write some chapters out for their upcoming depositions and crosses and you know, really doing that whole thing of setting that, you know, what we realized or, you know, working with Roger and working with all the lawyers that we've worked with is the importance of a foundation, of those foundational questions when you're going into a cross-examination. And so to, you know, just like you need a foundation in a story, you need that who, what, where, but I don't want to get off top. I'm Mr. Tangent, by the way. I love tangents. But so that's one of the things that we do. We also, so we'll help, you know, develop that and at least get people in the right direction. We're not lawyers. We don't pretend to be lawyers. Right. So that's not something, but we're really thinking about this as storytelling. And we're also thinking about it as what are you going to get from your witness? Because we've been in so many different scenarios and played different types of characters in those simulations or different types of witnesses that we know pretty well how people are going to react. You know, if it's the ego-driven expert or the very nervous lay witness, there's certain things that you see over and over again. And we've studied a lot of depositions or transcripts as well that help, you know, you start seeing the patterns over and over again. So that's one thing we do. We also help people prep clients to be witnesses and give testimony. Once again, because of all of the experience that we've had, right. and also the storytelling experience as well. And then we do all the stuff where we do skills training as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're missing. Oh, we do. We also do, like I said, we do like sparring sessions.
Right.
So we've done some pretty in-depth mock trial work where we'll play a radiologist or a psychologist or, you know, one of those things. You know, when they don't have that deposition, they don't have that testimony, we'll create it with the lawyers and then they can present it to a mock trial jury and or just straight up spar, getting them ready for trial too. So we've done that.
Great. So you touch on something that it's crazy how different people coming from different backgrounds find the same answer through different routes to the same issue or problem. You said something about I worked as an adjuster, and the other side or the defendant or the whatever the plaintiff, whoever is on the other side, is lying, but actually they are not lying. They are thinking that their story is a true story, and that reminded me of what psychodrama is for like trial lawyers college, and they do I think a little bit of that on I don't know if at the ranch also they do that, but it's like to be able to get the information from whoever you have on the other side is cross-examination. You need to stand in the shoes of that person and feel like that person and empathize with what they are thinking, why they did what they did. And all of a sudden, a door opens, and that person that had all of their barriers up, the barriers come down, and they start speaking and building this cross, you know? So it's something that you experience from your background, your experience as an actor and a jester, and then other guys at the ranch many years ago, they came up with this psychodrama. So that's so interesting. And it's the same that happened to you with Roger Dodd, that, you know, he had these things that were the same that you guys, so I think that's fascinating that you guys do as actors, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, the secret power of, I think, of actors to kind of see through things is our empathy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're always any good actor is always taking an empathetic approach, even if you're playing like a supervillain or like the most evil person ever. Like, you have to make this a someone that you can connect with in some way. And I mean, all the best villains of all time, you know, they have a reason for what they do.
Right.
But the idea is, and this is why I love what we do when we look like at a transcript or something. It's just looking for those tells to find out, hey, what are they thinking and how are they thinking?
Right.
But no, like you said, it is interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like how it's the same good stuff, but you find it in different ways. And that's, you know, this is the other thing when we're working with people and kind of going off this thread, but you know, there's always you'll see like a lecture or something and somebody will say, hey, this is the way because it worked for me. And when I'm thinking about, like, when we're talking about this, where there's different ways to get to the same thing, it's really an individual. Everyone's kind of their own artist.
Right.
And when we're working with people, we never say, like, always and never. Like, we say, you should mostly do this and mostly do that. But there's, like, this creative part that I think every lawyer, any person that really enjoys going in front of a jury and trying a case, there's this performative person inside of themselves, and you know, you can polish that up, but it's always going to be an individual thing. Mm-hmm. And you're going to find your own solutions using the same tools that somebody else uses,
right? That's
slightly different, but there's always an individuality to these things. There's always a different way, a different path that might not be the same as, you know, super lawyer, you know, A and super lawyer B. Those both super, it's very, very successful people, but they're going to be different. They're going to have different approaches. Like,
right.
They're going to have their own thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely does.
Need a trial lawyer who will fight for you? Call Lathrop Law Firm at 760-723-9612 or visit www.lathroplawfirm.com.
What's your take on that, Olivia? Have you experienced the same, you know, realization, I would say, of, wow, these guys are talking about the same things that we've been dealing with, but coming from a different, you know, background and different experiences?
Absolutely. And I think that is where the art of storytelling comes in, right? Because that is what has been around forever. And different people have figured it out in their own unique ways, but we all have that in common, is the art
right.
of storytelling, right? So
yeah.
I think that is kind of where that comes from.
So how do you become a better storyteller? What would you say is the key to that, other than, you know, signing up for your course and, you know, I know that's part of it, right?
Yeah, for sure. So we say the number one rule to storytelling
yeah.
is it's not about you,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not about how you look. It's not about what you are doing necessarily with your hands. It's about what you are trying to get from your audience. And in a lawyer's case, that is your judge or jury, right? So what is your goal? What are you trying to get your audience to feel? At the end of, I always ask playwrights, by the end of your play, how do you want the audience to walk away? What do you want them to feel?
Right.
And that's the same kind of thing. It's always about your audience and their experience. And so thinking about that goal and taking that pressure off of you is going to be what constantly keeps you engaged with your audience and also kind of lower your defenses. So you're not tuning inward to, oh my God, what did I just do? What did I just say? You're able to adjust because you are only tuning in to your audience, their needs, and what you need from them.
Right. But at the same time, well, it's not about you. You're the instrument that conveys that story. So I assume that part of this preparation involves standing on your feet and connecting with whoever you're speaking and being a good communicator, right?
Absolutely. So. And I think, too, part of it is, you know, a lot of lawyers always say, well, I thought that I was listening, but I was really just listening for that person to stop talking
right.
so that I could go on with what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is also knowing that you might have something on paper and your goal, but getting there and the route to get there is going to be different based on what you're getting, right? And being okay with adapting to what you're receiving is a huge part of coming off as credible, of coming
yeah.
off as even just somebody who is actually, you know, fighting for your client.
Right.
And I think the other thing, too, that's really important, and this is for both of us, you know, Olivia's got a lot of experience teaching playwriting and working with playwrights in new play development, and then as in improv, the importance of facts or detail, mm-hmm. And getting opinion, getting especially a lawyer's opinion out of the way. And it's not, and I think that's the other part of this, it's not about you part.
Right.
It's not about what you want people to think or feel. It's about how are you presenting this story through a verifiable facts that allows your audience to put it together so they own it. And it's no longer, they don't have to trust you. It doesn't matter about you because you've created a story that now they own, and they're going to go way further than any goal that you ever could put out because you allowed them, you trusted your fact finders, your judge and jury to see beyond what you're saying. And in, like I said, getting that opinion, getting those conclusions out of your, especially in those cross examinations, getting that out of there, because as a witness, when we're doing simulation, anytime we hear, you know, a conclusion like about how I should, as a witness, how I thought or felt, you don't know how I thought or felt,
right?
And I'm never going to agree with you on how I thought or felt, especially when I'm the opposing witness.
Right.
And so those things are going. But if we go one step at a time, and it goes back to the, you know, that Roger technique of, you know, one fact at a time, leading questions only, and you're systematically getting those really nice hard facts out there, and you do it in a nice order, you're telling a beautiful story that people can follow and they can connect with. And so that's the other part of when we were saying, like, it's not about you, it's about the facts and it's about the story that you're telling.
In other words, how to convey an objective story in a way that creates a sensation, a feeling, a conclusion that is your desired conclusion, right? So it's like, I just want to convey facts, make the jury reach out the conclusion you want them to reach without you telling them this is how you should decide here.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating.
We have an example where it's like, you know, instead of telling the jury it was a bad accident, mm-hmm. well, what's the facts behind it? The jaws of life were used in the rescue. Now, as a listener, I am imagining the jaws of life, and that's no longer a bad accident. That's a horrific accident, right? So you didn't tell me it was bad, but you showed me. You allowed me to imagine it in my head, and now it's much clear picture, and it's much worse of a picture.
Right, The power of words. I listen, I don't know if you know Keith Mitnick.
Mm-hmm.
I have read all of his books, and he's a big advocate of language, you know, instead of talking about accident, talk about the crash. And immediately when you use the word crash, and that's like the easy one, but you imagine the metal, the, you know, bent, and the sound, the smoke coming out of the vehicle, it's more of a shocking image. So it's all connected, the power of language with the framing, and then also the performers, right, that you guys are, and how you teach that to lawyers. That usually lawyers in general, we are trained to be writing and reading and seated at a library. We're not trained to stand up and perform. Maybe it's a few out there that speak well in public. That's like somewhat related to be a lawyer, but it's the performance part that is sometimes so challenging for us.
You know, and this is where, like, the improv world comes in, where I really like what we do and in the programs that we do, because everything that I, you know, when you're teaching improv, it's like a very joyful thing, and because we're teaching you to be like, hey, don't sweat making mistakes, because you're going to, but those could be opportunities. So we need to not be afraid of screwing up. We need to be really comfortable with that. And so we take this approach with the way that we've taken these improv exercises to help teach, you know, the things that the skill sets that we're putting out there. But our Olivia and I both, and I think it's also probably the way, because we worked with kids so much, we know that the more fun you're having, the more you're actually going to play with these skills and tools, and they're going to become part of you. They're going to you're actually going to be able to take them on, because you're not going to be fearful of playing with them. You know, kids learn really fast because they're playing, they're having fun. And it's like, oh, I messed up, that didn't work so well, and let me try it this way. Oh, this works really well. Now I'm having a lot of fun because I'm really kicking butt here, you know, and that kind of stuff. And so we take that approach with the skills that we're doing. So it's not a negative feeling or like, oh God, I got to go and work. It's like, hell yeah, we get to work, you know? Right. And even when we're prepping people for trial, that's the fun part. You guys get to go to trial. That's awesome. You did all this terrible, like you said, writing and getting a client and doing, you know, all of the different paperwork and all the different things that you need to do that, you know, worrying about the money and all that. And when you get to trial, that's the time to perform. That should be the most fun part of what you're doing, right. Not the most stress. I mean, it's going to be stressful, but that could be really great. That's fuel, you know, that's where you're like, you're feeling it,
right.
You're feeling alive. And that's why I love that we've grown from just doing these skills trainings and things like that, where we get to work with people and go, hey, you know, you haven't had the time to sit down and think about your story. And now we get to do that together, and we'll do it. We're going to make it like 10 times faster because there's three heads now and we're all focused on the same thing. But you know, that idea that the more fun you're having, the more you're going to be a better performer,
right.
Most of the time. And when we're doing the trainings, you're going to take those skills and those tools on.
And we'll talk a little bit about the trainings too. I think it would be good if you give us a little bit of, like, I don't know, some examples of the things that you train people to play with, because I think that's very interesting. But before we talk about that, I want to come back to something you said, that you said, I'm ADD or ADHD, and I didn't want to, you know, do scripts because I forget. And I feel that that's a big issue when you're doing cross-examination. And if the fear of forgetting when you're present, and how to do it so that you are present, listening, without thinking on, okay, after he finishes talking about this, I need to get this witness to this point that is part of my script. So in a way, it's a dispute, a mental dispute between the scripted acting, the scripted lawyer, right, with the improv lawyer. And how you combine those two, maybe you don't need a script anymore. But then your ADD, your ADHD, which I feel like we all are a little bit, you know, a little bit like that, the fear of forgetting to bring this point across.
You know, I want Olivia to chime in on this for sure too, but first of all, there's never a part where we're saying you don't have to prepare anymore. You have to prepare.
For sure.
And that's part of it. That's how you live and breathe your case, you know, and what your strategy is. But we know that especially the success we've had is when you're goal oriented, when you're clear on what you're trying to achieve, you have a freedom, and the constructive cross techniques are really good for what we call off-roading. So you want to have your you know, Roger calls them chapters, but it's just your organization for, I want to prove this. I want to prove this. I want to get to this. I want to enter all these different types of information in here through this witness, and then let everyone kind of put it all together at the end. But when you're organized like that, and you have a clear idea of what are my goals here, what are all my goals, you are able to, what we call off-road, like you can follow a really great opportunity. And the other thing that improv does really well is, you know, talking about like that becoming, I don't want to say getting rid of fear, it's just having a healthier relationship with fear. And so you can say, hey, I am prepared. I do know what I'm talking about, and I know I can get back there. And especially with these skill sets, I can get back there because this helps me navigate, because I'm just going one little piece at a time. I'm not trying to prove everything in one question. It gives you a lot of control to be able to go, okay, I know where I need to go, and I'm getting further away from it than I am getting closer. And this feels like I've got all the information out of here. Let me get back to my questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and taking a moment to do that, a breather, it's going to seem way longer to you to go and look at your questions to get back to that than it is for anyone that's watching you.
Right.
And actually, improv actors do rehearse. I don't know, a lot of people know that, but we do. It's a thing because you have to be able to feel comfortable and also just go with whatever works in the moment and the unexpected to mine the gold of the situation. So I think that's part of it, right? Is not being so attached to your script that you're missing the gold that the witness could actually be giving you, right, and using that, right? Because mm-hmm. their words could be way better than the words that you even had planned. And if you're so stuck to that plan, you're going to miss it. And yeah. so one of the things that we teach in our program is the spontaneous loop or the improvised loop, right? So if you're asking us a question and we kind of veer off, to just repeat one of the words that we said and use that, tie that to something that works for you and your narrative so that we feel as witnesses that we were heard, but it also kind of helps you stay in control if they're going off topic, to kind of get you back and to steer you back with what you want to talk about.
Right. And I read Roger Dodd's books, and he's a big fan of the loops as well.
Yeah.
And you've seen it, was it that double loops or I don't know, like there are different, what's the different loops that you can use, but basically, I don't know if it was single loop or double yeah. loop, right?
Yes, there's multiple kinds of loops. Yes, right. The single loop would just be if I said, you know, if you asked me it was a bad accident and I said it was devastating, and then you loop me, it was a devastating accident, right? So you repeated it. So now you can use the word devastating because I did, right? And I'm not going to contest that. But then if I go off on a much longer thing and I gave you a lot of really good stuff, you can loop the first thing. And then in your second question, you loop the next thing that I might have said that worked also. So that you're pinning both of those things and repeating both of them.
Right. And to be able to loop, you really need to be present.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you're just missing this gold. And I was going to say, the gold mine is in being present more than what is going to come out of the questions that you have on your script, right? Mm-hmm. That in your experience, is that the case?
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to add on there. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. These techniques and skills only work if you're really sharp on them.
Right.
You know, and if you're working this as part of your trial prep in there, is that I need, just like an actor, and Olivia can speak on this with people that she's worked with, but the best actors, the best athletes, everybody, they're working skill training all the time, and especially when they're going to go and perform at a high level, they're skill training. So when you are skill training like that, these are things that you're not thinking about because they're just a part of you, right? So you're leaning on tools that are just there because you've worked them so much that it's just your second nature,
right?
You know, like you're no longer thinking about what you're doing because it's just part of you. So you're thinking about, what am I getting? What is the witness giving me? What are the gifts? And that's what we do in improv all the time. We're always looking for little interesting little things that no one else sees, and then it becomes our scene.
Right.
Like, you know, because somebody said thimble, and it's like, oh God, that's the biggest thimble, you know, and no one else sees it, but yeah, I don't know what we're gonna do with some thimble or whatever. But you know, yeah. it's an interesting word or a way that somebody looked at somebody or something reacted to somebody. But those are same things that are happening in that cross and in that deposition. There's always something little that can be a tell.
Right.
That
help your story.
Yeah, and helping, those are opportunities. And it's like, I'm not exactly sure where that's going to go, but I know there's something there, and I'm going to start digging at it because that, you know. And then all of a sudden, and this happened just a little bit ago with the deposition with the notary. he wound up admitting that basically he wouldn't have notarized it at all because she started digging. She started, the lawyer that we worked with, she started digging. She heard something really strange. There was a lot of strange things in this deposition. But she started digging at it, and the guy's like, oh, if I would have known all this stuff, and I don't have any notes. I don't even know what happened. It's like super shady thing. But anyways, it's like, yeah, getting all of that training out of the way so you can be super present.
Right.
I think what's also like just not being afraid of being curious. Like I said, you have your plan, but who knows how it's going to go. And if you stay curious, your ears are open to whatever that odd thing might be.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because you two coming from a theater, you know, acting background, dealing with lawyers. You have David Ball. I don't know if you're familiar with him. And I don't think he's a lawyer either. And he's been writing the most amazing lawyer books as to how to convince a jury. And any lawyer that does trial work will tell you David Ball changed the game from the reptile theory, and, you know, after
damages,
that.
Yeah.
Damages. Damages mm-hmm. and all those books. So ultimately, this thinking out of the box, bringing ideas, they they come sometimes from different backgrounds, like we were talking before, and lawyers don't have the answers to every single question when it comes to lawyering, you know?
Right.
So it's good to bring other professionals to help us.
Yeah.
Into this,
Well, we're your jury members too, right? We're the people who aren't sort of, you know, thinking about it from that legal aspect, but we are right. listening as an audience. And,
right.
And so we're connecting with it in a much different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for a lawyer, for example, that is thinking on getting involved in this type of preparation, how does it work on more of a practical way? So they reach out to you and do you see this lawyer like once a week? It depends if they are like presenting a case soon, like they're preparing for trial. I assume that you can work, this is what I think, you'll correct me, but if I want to get involved in doing improv, we can do it every now and then, you know, on a constant basis so that I can develop these skills. But then if I have a trial, there is probably more of like an intense preparation. How is it?
Yeah, so we have group classes that okay. we do mostly by Zoom, but we also come to wherever city and do them, you know, at specific law offices or if you have a group that we can come to. But yeah, we have plenty of clients right now that are just like, I got a trial coming up and my partner just said I talk like a robot. Help me. And I need to be helped by next week. And so we can do that. We get, you know, private sessions, 90 minutes, and we like in a heartbeat can sort
wow.
of pinpoint what those are really quickly because of our background and because of the experience we have with attorneys. We can tune into those really quickly and it shifted. She wrote us back the next week after she did her opening statement. She's like, oh my gosh, I had inflection and tone. I had fun. I was smiling. I was engaging because we can really find those specific details and work on them, especially in a private session.
And how many sessions, for example, let's say I was going to make an analogy, you know, you reach out to these guys that are doing graphics and you tell them I have a trial in a month. They tell you, well, we need 2 months in advance to, what's the shortest lawyer that is like,
okay,
you know?
It just happened. I have an example. Okay. We sent out an email on Wednesday saying, hey, send us, do you have a transcript or like a opening statement, something that still haunts you? Send us the video, send us the deposition, whatever. We'll give you a 30-minute strategy session where we're going to like take, you know, kind of see what went wrong, our take on it. And then we'll give you an action plan. A lawyer reached out to us on Thursday, I think it was,
yeah.
and said, I have to cross this woman on Monday. Can you meet tomorrow, Friday? And we did. And she had her cross on Monday. We haven't seen her yet, but to see how it went. But it transformed her cross because she said she had, you know what? I don't need you guys anymore. At the last minute, she's like, I don't need you anymore. I've got the evidence. I got it. Thankfully, we met with her because, you know, that's the other thing that improv will do. It'll give you patience because lawyers do want to just get to like, I've got the mic drop moment. I've got the thing, the
right.
Matlock moment. But you need to slowly be able to lock in your witness to that. Otherwise, you're going to waste a lot of time. They're never going to agree to what you want them to. So we helped her figure out those step-by-step ways to lock them into the really hardcore, amazing evidence she had so it didn't undo her entire cross.
Awesome.
And the other program that we're actually going to be rolling out soon too is we kind of call it the all you can eat improv,
all you can take
improv, all you can play improv. Well, it's going to be a 3-month program, and it's going to we've had all these really great clients over the last few years that took our classes over and over again, and we started creating programs for their needs. And because of that, they've had this journey, and they went from, you know, a place where they were frustrated to now they are like, they're so great. I mean, a public defender in Montana, a plaintiff lawyer in Kansas City, Susie Njigian, who just had a huge win. But we worked with them quite a lot, and we had this journey with them, and we're going to recreate that into a 3-month program where there'll be multiple classes a week. You don't have to get to every one of them. What we say in that 3 months, if you can average one a week or, you know, double up some weeks or whatever, it's going to take you from all those skill-based training in that first month and then go into working in improvised cross-examinations, and then working mock trial, like simulation cross-examinations in that last month. So you're kind of working, getting that same journey that a lot of our best clients have had over a two-year period, and you're getting it in just 3 months. And it can work around, because it's going to be a virtual thing, it works around your schedule. So it doesn't have to be something that is really expensive and that you have to be away from work or, you know, do fly and do all that. It can just be something that's part of your routine, like going to the local gym or something like that. So that's one of the things that we're going to be throwing out there too, as an option for people to get that training and get that transformation. So those skills and that training just become second nature to you.
And when are you rolling this out?
In the between the first and second quarter of next year. So it'd be like 2025. Yeah.
Okay.
So January, February, and then it'll go into April, early May. So,
okay. Great. So you either, you know, a la carte, or you get the full 3 month menu. That's great.
We want to meet you where you are, basically.
Right.
So what is your need? Where are you? Do you want us there? Do you want to meet us online? Do you want to be alone? Do you want to have that group experience? We want to make it so it's accessible to as many people, because it's, you know, it's something that Roger used to say. It's not about the lawyer. It's about the clients, and with the type of lawyer that we work with, those plaintiffs, the criminal defense, and the law, family law lawyers, you know, these are people that are in really tough situations, and it's really rewarding for us to be a part of, like, helping those people out in that.
So just going back a little bit of, we talk about the loops, right? What are the, we wanted to talk a little bit about this. I don't want to give away too much, because, you know, people need to pay for this. It's too valuable to get it for free. But what are other things that you would like to share with our listeners?
We have an exercise, actually, that we want to share with your listeners, because like I said before, it's like, you know, don't just wait for them to stop talking before you have to kind of not load up with your next question, right? So in order to kind of practice getting something, you know, whatever gift who you're talking to is going to give you, there's an exercise that we do called last letter, first letter. And so it's just a conversation. But I can't say anything until you're done talking. And whatever the next thing that I say has to start with the last letter of whatever you ended on. So for example, will you do this with me?
Okay. Yeah.
So Steve's going to give us a topic, and we're just going to have a conversation.
All right.
Your topic is ice cream. And by the way, it's just a launching off thing. Don't worry about the topic.
Yeah. Okay.
Listen to that last letter of her last word, or whoever starts out. That'll be the first letter of the first word in the next sentence.
So you go ahead and start. And then my next sentence will start with whatever the last letter of what you said was.
Okay. Last night I went to a restaurant, and for dessert I had this ice cream with a cake.
Exactly what I had. And mine had a fly in it.
The fly in your cake. You had a cake as well?
As well. And I have to think of the last letter. Literally, it was the biggest fly you have seen in your entire life. I took a picture of it.
The picture that you took, was it on your phone, or did you have a camera with you?
Well, I didn't have my phone with me, so I took it on my friend's phone.
Exactly what I did the last time I saw a fly on my cake.
It's hard, but listen.
It is hard.
It is, but what you're doing is, you can do this at Starbucks. The person will hopefully never know, because the point is to really keep it as conversational as possible. And to not sort of, you can't load up with what you're going to say next, right? I have to really take my cue from you, so you can practice this anywhere and try to make it as seamless as possible.
Right. I can tell you what happened to me is that I was so focused and thinking. So I'm basically, improvising. And this is like an exercise that helps you be a better person to improvise, basically, right?
Yeah, and that whole thing of even looping, right? I don't know what you're going to say next, but I think it's going to give me something that I could use, right? And especially in this exercise, I have to use it. That's what I'm actively doing. So right. To listen for those things is an exercise that anybody can do.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I think we covered most of the topics we wanted to cover.
Yeah.
We're reaching an hour. That was a great conversation. I don't know if there is anything else that we're going to give your guys' contact to wrap up, you know, because if someone wants to get in touch with you, where do they find you?
So we're at houseimprov.com. That's mm-hmm. house spelled H-A-U-S and then improv, I-M-P-R-O-V.com. And we do have two free resources on our website. The first one is called Facts to Feels. So it's about exactly what we were talking about before. Like, how do you turn hard facts mm-hmm. into something that engages an audience's emotions and empathy? And so we have a resource for that. And then also with our witness prep, we gathered the top questions that we ask witnesses when we prepare them for trial and put them all into a document that have really, like, those answers, we've passed them on to attorneys because it's created sort of their narrative from it. So stuff that you wouldn't think to ask that, you know, as non-lawyers, we ask witnesses that really help attorneys create, you know, that story that they're going to take to trial.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank
that was
you.
A great chat.
Thanks. Yeah.